so just do an attendance. Since here. What if you got that already tracked for us?
Skolnick
here.
McCormick.
Yep.
Schultz is absent. Pasonis.
Here.
Highlander.
Here.
Melmer.
Here.
Homer.
Here.
Goderberg. Absent. Edie is absent. Carlson.
Yes.
Hoopin. And he's absent.
Okay. Right. So I'm covering for Christine, who's on vacation. So I'll try my best. And Pat counseled me, don't let everybody talk at the same time. So
she likes to keep the records. I think you're charged with putting the minutes or whoever it is. I don't know.
I know it's helpful to keep track of that. But anyways, I think, so we'll call order. First thing would be, and correct me if I'm getting things out of order, because I've never run one of these things before, so bear with me. But first thing is to set the agenda. And there was an agenda provided by Brent, and there's additions. I have some additions I'd like to make, but
go ahead.
Okay, so I know you had one.
I just have one. Very brief. I'd just like to provide a quick update on the conversations we've had about benefits and incentives. Just kind of an FYI piece.
And Mark, if you could call commissioners by name.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
So Commissioner Malbert made that suggestion. Okay. The suggestions I would have, this is Commissioner Carlson, would be an update on the budget request. I know there's been some work there. There's been some conversations on budget requests for the HBC for next year. An update on where we are, if there has been any, on reach out to properties that we mentioned last month we wanted to reach out to about their interest in becoming historic properties.
Are you talking about the historic district or something else?
The four properties that we had identified
hills,
last. Yeah, there is. We wanted to reach out to them and start that following. I'd like to see if Brent could give us an update on that, as well as an update on any on the ordinance. I understand, Brent, you had a meeting with Christine, and there's some discussion about the ordinance suggestions that were protecting potential properties, and also about how historic districts might be covered. Those are the ones I had.
And I have one addition to the agenda, would be some information from the History Center that I received today.
Okay, History Center update. Are there any other suggestions? Nope. Can't make a motion? Okay.
I'll move to approve the agenda.
Okay.
As remember.
Commissioners Kolnick made the motion.
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. If you want to pass this to the election. We can note that Commissioner Edie is here. All right, so I think we go on to open forum. Is there anybody in the public that would like to speak?
John Friesel, I would just like to stress the importance of establishing our historic district as soon as possible. I think that everyone is well aware of the still the marketplace that we're working with and the urgency of many people to try and put a project forward that would endanger, I'll just use my words, any remaining historic structure, whether it be a landmark or not. The face is changing so rapidly, I would hope that we get the ordinance as soon as possible so that the HBC Commission reviews any structure that's on the potential list moving forward, okay, regardless of the incentive package that can always come later. Right now is having the district established.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes?
Robert Bucky Beeman. Just want to pass out a couple images, if you don't mind, just across to the table here. I'm working on a project in downtown Rochester. Myself and a business partner are leasing a space at 220 First Avenue Southwest. And this is a previous space called China Hall, and you can just pass those images if you don't mind. And we are leasing the second level of 220 First Avenue Southwest. Our intentions are to call this space offices at China Hall. It'll have seven office spaces with a very historic feel of keeping the old vintage doors, old vintage trim, painted on signs on the doors themselves. And One thing we'd love to do is bring this China Hall sign back to where it originally belonged on First Avenue, where it was on the building at 220 First Avenue
Southwest. I guess it was
are we supposed to move
pass it around? I guess it's four copies.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you want to? I can share one.
No, yeah. it's the adult.
I wasn't sure.
Or oh, that's where it was. So there's the sign that they want to move it back.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Wait, they want to move it from here to here.
I think that's the appropriate
thing.
Yeah.
Trying to read
it. So,
okay. Okay.
Next door.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
So the location is 220 First Avenue, some adult bookstores on the main floor. The upstairs has been vacant since about the 50s, and we are now going through a renovation right now of that second level. We're excited to work with some small businesses to lease out that second floor. And what we'd love to do is bring the sign back to its original home, 220 First Avenue Southwest, and we do have a local community member that's kept this sign in good condition. We're currently getting prices of what the refurbishment will be of that sign from a local reputable sign company, Rochester Sign Company. And I know based upon the city planning opinion that it would not fit within the DMC ordinance, but I would just ask that at some point in the process we get a letter of support from the historic preservation of trying to refurbish this historic sign and put it back to its original location, as I think it brings a lot of character to First Avenue, and it helps bring just our history back out in that area to tell the story of what that area once was and what it still has the opportunity to be. So at some point in the process, I'll ask for a letter of support as we go through figuring out the feasibility of the cost and if we can actually afford to refurbish it and put it back into its original location.
Is that a neon sign?
It does have neon in the sign, mm-hmm. Correct.
My understanding of city procedures, and somebody else would know more about this than I do, but don't signs and changes in signs have to go through some review process in city government that doesn't necessarily involve us initially?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought we decided that.
So how did just for his information,
right. how would it get to us first then?
Does it go to us first? Does it
no,
go to us?
The sign would be handled through a building permit process, which would go to the planning and zoning department for review and approval to see if it meets the zoning ordinance regulations.
Would it then come
Mr. Beeman's asking for a letter of support from this commission, since I believe the sign does not meet the standards
right.
that the city has adopted for projection signs.
So when would we do that in terms of fitting into the
now.
Time right now?
Well, I don't know what his process is as far as when he's going to submit a building permit. So
I would say first we're just nailing down the cost just to make sure that it is truly going to be feasible to afford to refurbish it. I would say that's going to happen pretty quickly here, and then I will be coming back with a
So there's time to do it at the next meeting that we have or the meeting after that.
I would be open to that suggestion.
Bucky, I need to make some additional comments.
I'm sorry.
It's related to that.
Are
if
you
I can,
I'm
yeah.
going to
that'd be great.
I would suggest that the HPC Commission look at this sign, same as a building, as a landmark. And it is very similar to the landmark of the facade of the Chateau Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Once a landmark, always a landmark. So I believe that it's a lot different than looking at the sign ordinance that's become a modification, because I don't know whether there was a modification to allow the marquee of the Chateau Theater to stay there because the standards have changed, but the interpretation of the standards changed. So this, in fact, was a landmark then. It's a landmark now, if you believe that to be the case. So I think it has different criteria.
Yeah.
When did the sign come down?
Oh, I took it down about, I don't know. You always ask hard questions. The answer is a lot easier than, or not as easy as the question, but I think off the top of my head, I took it down maybe, you know, bought it. Took it down, put it in the storage. I don't know, could have been 25 years ago.
What's the Rochester
Don't know. Very restorable, and I'm very familiar with the sign and working with the details of making it like it was when it was there to distinguish First Avenue and the building.
I think it was in the 80s it came down, so it was there for a very long time before
it
came down.
It was there from...
I do have that photo from 1950, so... I wasn't born in the 80s, but insurance, so you're over 25.
It's fairly
Johnny was up when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Unsupervised four-year-old walking downtown.
Mr. Chair, yeah, this is an open forum period. It's not here to discuss something, so I think if you want it on the agenda, we should get it on next meeting agenda. So.
Okay. Anybody else want to speak?
Question on the origin of the name China Hall. What's the relevance of it? What does it mean?
I don't know if it's relevant to this meeting right now.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we could talk to
Okay.
I
think
it has China wear.
It was. I grew up in Rochester.
Anybody else want to speak before the HPC? I'm just cognizant that we have a time limit of about 6:30. I think we get kicked out of the room. So I'm going to keep the meeting.
Six.
You're saying make it six so we hit 6:30? Okay, sure.
Six. Do you want an answer to that question?
I don't think we're
not right now.
We're not. We're not. Okay, this is.
I just want to give them. Interesting for afterwards. How about that? Okay. Any other comments during the open forum? Okay. Well, then we'll go on to the consent agenda. So the first thing would be the approval of the HPC minutes. Does anybody have any comments or updates needed there?
Motion to approve.
Second.
So motion by Mr. Holmer, seconded by Mulberg. Sorry, Mulberg. I just know that first name. Any discussion on it? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? All right, so we'll go on to, let's see, so the items we added to the agenda, did they get added to what section?
Under new business.
They would be under new business, thank you. Okay. So we'll go to old business, which is the draft report we have for the Downtown Commercial Historic District report.
So at the meeting in April, the commission asked PBN to look at those properties that were labeled as just commercial at that time. So PBN put together a memo stating which properties that were contributing to the district that they changed from the commercial name to a name that was either associated with the original owner or a long-serving tenant of that building. So so basically, we have bound copies of the report in final form. So I think our role tonight is to determine if the commission feels that it is in final form, and if we do feel that way, we will submit it to Schiphol for their 60-day review process. And back also in that April meeting, the commission thought it would be a good idea to have some type of educational sessions for the property owners within this district during that 60-day review by Schiphol. So we may want to kind of look at our calendars and maybe determine two dates and times that would be work for most of the commission members to attend a educational session and invite the property owners within the district itself to these sessions so that they can learn about the district itself and what impacts it may have on their property. So Tamara Lutz from PBN is here this evening and has a short presentation of the district. And then after that presentation, the commission shall decide if it's in a final form that we can send up to Schiphol. And then maybe talk about some potential dates and time allocations for the educational sessions. So, any questions? If not, I can turn it over to Tamara for her presentation.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask that people silence their electronics if they could.
I'm trying to.
I'll be quick, and while I'm quick, I'll tell you that China Hall sign, as best we can tell, until 1990. hey, Brent, I don't know how to use this.
Sorry.
Thank you. So, over the past, I think it's been about 10 months at this point, we have explored 40 properties within the proposed district boundaries, We've identified 31 of those as contributing to the potential historic district, and 9 as non-contributing. The vast majority of non-contributing are either empty lots or really, really recent construction within the past decade or so. In December, we had proposed the boundaries that you see here. In January, and we've discussed this in previous meetings, we proposed different boundaries based on the feedback of city staff who's no longer here. And in March, we all agreed on the boundaries at the far right. Those are the boundaries that exist in the district today, as proposed. This has all stayed relatively the same. We see 3 distinct periods of commercial development in your downtown core, 1870 to 1889, 1890 to 1945, and then following World War II, 1946 to 1962. As far as the designation criteria are concerned, we think the downtown district meets criterion A for its character, interest, or value as part of the development, heritage, or cultural characteristics of the city, state, or United States, and criterion H for location, scale, or other physical characteristics representing an established and familiar visual feature or neighborhood district or community of the city. So we also see criterion A under your designation and criterion B, in that the district does possess an appropriate degree of integrity of location, setting, design, materials, workmanship, and association given its age. So we've proposed a period of significance of 1870 to 1962, which coincides with the construction of the oldest extant structure within the district and ends with the construction of the Crossroads Shopping Center and movement away from the downtown commercial core. So as we've discussed, Rochester is somewhat unique in the post-war period in that in addition to sort of updating your downtown buildings with some new facades, actually new construction took place in commercial investment and retail establishments. In other cities, that started to move towards the suburbs much earlier. Within the period of significance in those 3 periods of growth, we see 1870 to 1889 as the area's growth as a regional commercial center. It places the city of Rochester in a larger architectural context of other Minnesota river towns, and you see contiguous blocks of storefront buildings that are usually 1 to 2 stories of masonry construction, and they have consistent punched window openings at upper levels and often a storefront at the main floor. From 1890 to 1945, Rochester evolves from a regional center into a city with a distinct niche industry. You see the continued development of the contiguous storefronts from the 1890s to the 1910s, and then from 1910 to 1920 and through World War II, you see the construction of really focused, purpose-built buildings. From 1946 to 1962, following World War II, you see development begin to wane in the downtown, except that you do have some commercial development and some restoration and sort of renovation of some of the historic buildings to modernize them and make them attractive to a mid-century consumer. When I was last here, we discussed the convention of identifying buildings that don't have a prominent owner, a distinct architect, or a prominent early tenant as commercial buildings, and the commission directed me to go ahead and do some archival research to identify long-term tenants, prominent tenants, tenants that appeared regularly through the city directory for those buildings. And so we'll come back to these building names in a minute, but I do want to show you that we researched 1873 to 1962 in city directories, and these are the tenants that either had a long-term or appeared in prominent advertisements. I've given you all the titles if you're interested. Buildings that have previously been identified as commercial are listed here. And these are the names that we have proposed based on the prominence of a tenant, the frequency with which someone appeared in the city directories, or a long-term relationship with the building. So the building at 211 Broadway Avenue South was its longest tenant and earliest tenant was the John J. Fulkerson Grocery, and so we proposed naming the building as such. The building at 318 Broadway Avenue South for 29 years was both the A.J. Baring Barbershop and the Baring Hotel, so the barbershop would have been on the ground level and residential hotel rooms on the second. For From 1900 to 1938, Baker and Hansen was located at 319 to 321 Broadway Avenue South. At the same time, the Council Saloon was located in the building. So they had a shared tenancy in 1900. From 1911 to 1945, Rochester Egg and Poultry was the longest term resident at 320 to 322 Broadway Avenue South. There was an egg and poultry company there previously, but Rochester had the longer tenancy. Black's Lunch, and I've taken liberty with names here, at 323 Broadway Avenue South, was in the building, was named Black's Lunch during the mid-20th century, but an iteration of that family owned a restaurant, and it was usually Black's Cafe or AJ, like, it evolved, and so I went to the last name, but that was the tenancy from 1923 to 1962. 324 Broadway Avenue South was the C.J. Morrill & Son wholesale grocer through the first decade and a half of its lifetime. 325 Broadway Avenue South had the potential for a number of names, but the longest and most prominent tenant that we found was the firm of F.A. Poole, so we proposed F.A. Poole Building. The Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company was located at 326 to 328 Broadway Avenue South for 20 years, and you can see the sign to the right. That building. The Rochester Commercial Club building, and this could also have been called the Chamber of Commerce building, because those two organizations, I think, changed names or moved between the buildings several times. So the Commercial Club was there first from 1913 to 1917, and then back from 1927 to 1929. The Chamber of Commerce was there in the interim period and then after 1929. And then Holland's Food Shop was located at 216 First Avenue Southwest from 1937 to 1956. And that's another building where, over time, design work was done that created a prominent relationship with signage. And so those are the buildings. There was one building that really just didn't have a tenant stand out. It turned over tenants at about a 12-month period, and so it really felt disingenuous to try and tie one of them to the building, and so we do propose leaving that as commercial building to follow the conventions that the SHPO would expect to see. I'll just see directories. I've kept the assessment of integrity here. We believe that the district retains really strong integrity. It has not been moved. Sometimes buildings move around. They have not here. This still reads as a downtown commercial historic district, even with the intervening construction of the late 20th and early 21st century. You can still read a lot of the design elements on the historic building, and a vast majority of the masonry buildings read as masonry buildings, and so materials are intact. Level of workmanship really does vary as buildings are altered over time. Decorative elements that convey the hand of the workman disappear. But I would say that the integrity of association in the downtown commercial district is very, very strong. If it weren't, we would be having this conversation. I've color-coded maps that stay in the report, so you can identify a building by the district and period of development that it represents, but this is the sort of district at a glance, and you can see that the yellow properties represent the period of development from 1870 to 1889, which is the vast majority of the downtown development. The green buildings represent 1890 to 1945. The blue buildings represent 1946 to 1942, and again, that's both new construction and renovation. And then any red building or lot is a non-contributing property within the district boundaries. We've talked about the opportunities that exist once you move forward with designation of the district.
Wait, can we just go back to that?
Yes, absolutely. Maybe. I say that confidently, and then I don't quite know how to use this.
Wrong button.
Just use the down arrow.
The design guidelines?
No, it was the next
window one.
Oh,
back there.
This one.
So you believe that it has a strong chance of being on the National Registry as far as a district?
there will be some conversations about the large red areas.
Right.
But given that most of them are new construction and lots, and as we've discussed, we tried to keep the boundaries tidy in a way that don't create, like, strange, and I had to unfortunately use the word gerrymandered, boundaries, I think that there's potential here. The beauty of a district is that the buildings act collectively to establish integrity versus any one of these buildings having to make that measure and reach those status on its own.
Okay, so...
I do think there's a chance, yeah.
Okay.
So, okay, that's outside of the comment. I was going to ask about this. The hotel and then the bank building to the north, they're outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
Those were 60s.
Can you speak a little louder? I can't quite.
The hotel and the bank building from the 1960s that are outside of the boundaries, they represent slightly different sort of era,
right.
And they do move just far enough outside of the district boundaries to, that's where we get into kind of creative line drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would explore both of those either at an independent level or, and we've talked about this, there is a dramatic post-war narrative in Rochester that is outside of this development,
mm-hmm.
that I think those buildings may be a better
mm-hmm.
representation.
Teresa, I missed which property you were referring to, or you had a question on?
The building that Oxford's taken over on 2nd Street and Broadway, as well as the Holiday Inn that was originally built as a Sheraton.
So you're talking about the Associated Bank building.
Yes.
Okay.
The Associated
I didn't
Bank building and the old Sheraton.
Thank you.
I just love mid-century modern, sorry.
Me too. And it is unusual that we have stretched as far as we have.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that. And I do think that there are buildings in town that represent a later phase of development and growth that are sort of more appropriately collated, if you will, in that type of study.
So, Brent, the recommendation that you had was that we could send this to SHPO for review, this particular report, and they would then weigh in on the merits of it and give us a readout and that help us. Is that, or do we do community engagement first?
I think we would do
and
it.
Collect, I don't, well, that's what I'm asking. I don't know if there is a logical progression one has to happen, or maybe you could provide some experience of how that
I've
works
seen
best.
I've seen it both ways. If... Because the SHPO gets a generous amount of time, community engagement that happens sort of concurrently helps keep things moving. If you have to wait 2 months for the SHPO recommendations, and in this instance, I think that the SHPO recommendations will be that they agree with the proposed district. If it were something that I thought might be more controversial at a SHPO level, I might recommend, you know, the community engagement after you have some SHPO recommendations, but downtown historic districts are easy for the SHPO to
and we're,
see the merits
we're only of. Recommending that we're not recommending the actual hearing, it should come later.
Yeah.
This is just to alert the community and get feedback.
Well, actually, it's asking SHPO to weigh in on it, really, right?
Sure.
And then the community feedback sessions would where we get feedback from the community. Now, let's say. I'm just sensitive to other things that have happened in the community.
Mm-hmm.
If you send this to SHPO and we have community stuff and then there's a, who knows?
I'd like to give a comment for the commission's benefit.
Yeah.
According to the ordinance, their comments are non-binding on the commission in your review.
The
so
SHPO comments would be.
Yep, it's informational.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. But the point I was going to would be if we got a lot of feedback during our community and engagements and we said, oh, well, we want to change something about it, would we have to reset the clock or do something based on what we learned through those?
Because your ordinance states that it's informational and non-binding, it's really a courtesy review.
So we could take your report and modify it, I guess, later.
Let's
say we said, we're going to agree to it except for this one property. We've
mm-hmm.
all agreed. We've got feedback. We should do that.
Well, I would think that we could modify it.
Gail had her hand up, please.
I think we should submit this as soon as possible, and I make a motion that we send it off to them. We can talk about all the details that happen concurrently later, but I would make a motion that we send it.
Second.
Any other discussion on the motion?
I was going to say that even after we send it to SHPO, we still are going to have the education sessions and then
yes.
a hearing, and we could actually amend it, even at the council, city council level, it could be amended at some point. So
yep.
we have to start it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would support that motion.
Yeah.
It's time to get it rolling.
Okay. Any other discussion on that motion? So we had a motion by Commissioner Eby. Seconded by Skolnick, or was it Mull?
It was both
at the same time. All right. Want to take the vote then? Okay, sure. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So that'll start the clock then?
Correct. I'll get it submitted to SHPO. The other thing the commission should discuss is those educational sessions.
I think that it's important, yes.
You want me to send out like a doodle poll of possible dates and times and see?
Yeah, I guess I would maybe have some recommendations of the best way that how this has been done in the past in terms of.
Usually it is an open house type
yeah,
forum where you are able to speak to the research, speak to what the process looks like, how something would meet city goals. And what the opportunities and, frankly, constraints with local designation are so that people can understand.
The part I'm concerned, we have to make sure it's a much more push out. You can't just passively post it in something and say, well, we had a public forum and the same people show up. These property owners, I think, need to be reached out to very specifically.
Oh, and you usually
yeah.
do.
I just know that, the city just went through all the stuff in Broadway and they had to iterate how many times on that plan for that because people didn't read their mail or something like that. So that's the biggest concern I have is we go down a path and at the 11th hour, it'd be a lot of concern. So I don't know how we do that, but I think we talked about having at least two different sessions. When I talked to Christine earlier today, we talked just briefly about the agenda and stuff, and she suggested that we use PAM, the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, to help facilitate some of this. That was one suggestion she had. I don't know if Gail, if you had talked about that. They might help facilitate
mm-hmm.
some of the discussions and the benefits, and then PBN could be there maybe to answer questions. So
yes.
It's more than just, here's the report and ask us questions. Really, it's a question PBN can answer technical questions. PAM could articulate the pros and cons of and some of the restrictions or benefits that would come from that.
Yeah, I would support having PVN at these two meetings because it is their report in a sense. And if somebody asks a specific question about why their building is on the report, I don't think PAM, they could get up to speed,
right.
But I still think it's their report and they
I
should
agree.
Be there to ask the questions.
You may also be able to get a SHPO representative with an outline. That may be something worth.
That would be good.
Would we normally do like a one afternoon and one evening?
I've seen both. Evenings are usually better attended. I'll just speak frankly. In being easier to attend, they indicate that you're looking for feedback, whereas a day event is often hard for people who work.
But we could have like an open house, one in the evening, one in the afternoon.
One in the afternoon. I think if you're going to do two, do it that way. If you would only do one, I would recommend doing it.
Or are you arguing
yeah.
that we should do two in the evening?
No, I think if you're doing two, you have some flexibility. If it does come down to just doing one, I would recommend doing it in the evening.
Commissioner. I agree for the record.
I didn't see you.
I agree with the comment that was made that I think we need... SHPO if they're available,
mm-hmm.
PVN and Minnesota Alliance, and that maybe we have a slide presentation at a certain time, and then questions and answers.
And the question.
So is that enough information for you to know what to do with that? Yeah. Right. Okay.
Where would we have it here, or the council chamber?
That's for Brent
probably.
To determine.
Yeah, I would let Brent figure out the best venue. Yeah, that probably makes sense. Yeah.
The question I have is, we would definitely want to, of course, inform the property owners. How many property owners need to be contacted, and how do they get contacted? Like certified mail? Have they signed for their letter?
Oh, I've seen it happen by email. I mean, that's really at the city's discretion.
Yeah, my thought would be that we would send out letters to all the property owners within that within the district. So,
does it have to be adjacent property owners or just the district property owners?
It's usually just within the district because that's who would be impacted by the district. But if you do a public posting, you'll have people from around the district.
And you also still go from public notice in the newspaper also. It's just a generic notice.
Yeah, no. So what impact would this have on non-contributing members or properties in that boundary? Nothing, right? So it's really the contributing ones that have some skin in the game. Okay. Do we need any other discussion on this topic then?
Do we need a motion on the educational?
That's what I wonder. Yeah, you don't need that. Okay.
So yeah, and you also try to schedule it for the next month?
Like when? What? 60 days.
60 days. Yeah. Okay.
So you'll start off with a doodle poll kind of stuff, start the process rolling and formally notifying them, reaching out to Pam and to PDN. Well, we'll coordinate with PDN on their availability as well.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Let's see. We'll move on to new business, I guess, then. And the next one is the Chateau Theater improvements for interim uses. The commissioners have read that material. Mike, did you have anything you wanted to talk about that one?
I just appreciate your time here tonight to talk about this, answer any questions you might have. The memo does outline the overall scope of the project, which includes interim improvements inside and outside. We're really just kind of buying time until we get some activated area on the inside of the building until we put a lot of money in terms of what we do for the exterior for the full gamut of restoration.
I don't know how we start the discussion on this one. If there's any,
I guess I would recommend maybe Mike just give a brief overview of the proposed on the chateau and
I don't know if I looked over the design drawings. First of all, I start off by being complimentary. I felt that it was the drawings were very helpful, and when I was talking to Christine about that, she was very complimentary too. So she just said, Brent, this might be a good example of someone who comes future. You know, exterior modifications, this type of detail is really good. It helped for us to make, I think, an informed decision. So, thank you.
So I'll start off with saying,
I wanted to ask him something before we start. As you go through this, could you give me some kind of some kind of estimate about when these things would happen? Are we talking within the next 6 months or 3 months or like 5 years away?
So overall project scope right now for the interim improvements is planned to be out for bids in August and start fall construction. Hopefully be done with construction by January-ish, that time frame right there, which will allow them to kind of spring activation going on next year, 19. That's the overall goal. Now, we're in design process right now. Things could change the design. And we may say, there's a question there. Because we come back in too high, we have a budget of $1 million overall. We may have to make some changes on the scope. We don't know yet. So that's part of the process of going through the bidding process. Okay. I can start with it is mention that you folks have a review process that allow you some analysis of what can be looked at from a historic preservation standpoint. Brent outlined that in that front cover page that he provided to you. Most of the work we're doing on the exterior is what I consider maintenance. We're really not doing any changing of the areas. We're touching up paint, we're things in the brick area. The roofing is the biggest impact of it now. Right now, the base bid alternate that we're talking about, base bid for the project right now, is the roof comes off, the tiles come off, they would not go back on. There's an alternate that the roof tiles go back on in the end, but that's a cost factor. If they do not go back on, we will salvage those, store them in place until the final project does come forward as a bigger activity, which would be included as part of that. Otherwise, the windows will be a temporary covering on, ventilated covering to make sure they're still weather tight. The doors will be repainted. Again, the brick is clean, some touch-up, touch-pointing, et cetera, on the outside. There's not much to the project overall on the outside. Inside, the entire second floor of the chateau is going to be removed. Heating ventilation will be modified to accommodate that. Not the main components, but the ductwork on the inside. We're talking new lighting that will be going back in place as well to kind of retrofit and have enough foot candles down the main level where the activities will be taking place. New flooring, again, temporary in nature, will be put back in. least the end goal with that. The temporary release may not meet that is that we'll find it should tear off the roof and things like that. But that's the intention.
So, question for you then.
Oh, yeah. Here's what up. Escalator removal will be taken out as well. Okay. You know, which is part of the site for it.
What did you say?
The escalator is taken out of the center.
So question on the you have an alternate on the roof, a tile being replaced. Now you're saying that you're committed to putting that back on later?
That will be more, again, when that bid package comes forward, right. That will be one of those components that will be added to that final restoration package.
So it may happen sooner, or you may have to wait.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Will the skyway at all be impacted during the construction phase? And also... Where's the money coming from? Like, what funds? Who's paying for it?
So these are city funds allocated through the DMC process. So that's where the money's coming from. To answer your first question, second, the skyway will be impacted like any other project will impact other adjoining areas. Mm-hmm. The intention, though, is that the contractor will need to acknowledge that there is owner-occupied spaces, the skyway being one of them, that needs to be maintained as part of this project. Again, what extent they'll see for impact. We don't know that detail yet until they come back with the bid project to say, you know what, we can't do X, Y, Z for this reason because of it. But most of the work will be done on the inside without the impact of the neighboring properties or neighboring skyway.
I'm just hoping if they do impact the skyway that if it's a really terrible weather, because a lot of people who go to Mayo go through that, you know, who are patients and visitors go through that skyway there. So especially during really bad days, and so hopefully they would try to minimize the impact, especially on those really bad days.
So again, the impact on the skyway is not planned at all. So it's a matter of what do they find when they take off the roof? They've got to get into the skyway area to do some roof renovations. We don't know that answer yet. We don't anticipate anything, but it could be a mitigation of that.
I think Brenda, I'd ask your guidance. I think the purview of what we're being asked to weigh in is on the exterior modifications, really.
Yes, right? Correct.
So the interior stuff is within. So we're really focused on the roof and the. Yep. When I looked at it, it looked very good in terms of maintaining, you know, you're doing some repairs to the front facade, the gutters are being enhanced, the roof. So from the outside, it looks like you won't even be able to tell the difference other than, you know, some grout lines and fill it in and
cleaner.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Any other comments on that? Want to entertain a motion? Or if there's further discussion? I think we need a motion to approve this modification, this maintenance work.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I made the last one.
I'll second.
Okay, so seconded by Homer.
Just to be clear, your motion is to approve, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Approve as submitted. Huh?
Yes.
Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Opposed? Yeah, thank you. Again, I would just be complimentary. I thought the drawings were very helpful. I know when we looked at some other submittals, they weren't. It was very hard to follow what they're actually going to do and how the aesthetics would change this. Okay, so we're going to move on to the new agenda items we had. If I kept my order straight, I got this out of order. I think, I'll just go in the order that I wrote my little notes here. I think we wanted to get an update on where we were with the financial incentives.
Yeah, so we've met as a small subcommittee earlier in the spring and just kind of created a list of potential benefits and incentives that could be explored. Nothing has been decided. There's no funds kind of necessarily available for these, but just in terms of the research that the subcommittee has done, I'm just looking at some of the things that are available. So just a reminder that the city is committed to preserving its history, and so how do we then move forward with some of these benefits and incentives as we move further down the road? So we looked at the state and federal 20% tax cuts for the National Register properties, so that might be an additional incentive for folks even in that historic district, that if we can pursue that National Register piece. And there are just lots of state-level programs, so I kind of just went in order, federal, state, local programs that could be explored. Certified local government has some, once our ordinance meets the requirements for CLG, so it's about working with SHPO to try to get that process going. Facade easements through the Preservation Alliance, property assessed clean energy through the St. Paul Port Authority, and then various legacy amendment grants that might be available for folks to explore. Then we looked at some local level options, again, some facade improvement grants through the Rochester Downtown Alliance, then the revolving loan fund that's been kind of on the agenda that continues to be kind of in limbo, I think. Transfer of development rights was something that Christine kind of started exploring a little more as well, so that might be an option. Additional zoning assistance that we could work with other city departments on. Historic property building safety reviews that the Blue Duck kind of went through, and then maybe some TIF, if sparingly used, might be appropriate in some instances. So there's just a lot of other benefits then that we've kind of looked at in terms of sustainability and re-urbanism and just some other kind of more social benefits that people might explore. So I just wanted it to be on record that we are exploring these benefits and incentives and just to do some additional work with
anything
what the next steps are.
Question for you, would anything you're learning there that would influence what we want to submit for our budget for next year?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
Probably that group and the benefits and incentives group should get together and
okay.
explore what.
So I know Christine has a meeting with Brent and we have some other folks next week to talk about the budget. I believe it's some other things as well. But I think the budget was going to be talked upon on Thursday. Would we want to include?
Correct, yeah. Along with some other things.
Right.
Well, I could forward just this kind of summary of the various options
okay.
to you. Does that make
what would be
yeah,
what would be appropriate, Brent, for that?
Just to kind
to
of have
to
it.
Christine and me and you, or something like that, or to everybody.
You can send
sure
it to me.
That way, at least it's something we can talk through when we're.
There's no guesstimate about how much money would be involved in terms of city funds for all this stuff, is there? From your group?
No, I mean, and that would be just the additional research that we need to do is to look at. What other cities are doing and what kind of money that they have set aside for these kinds of
things. Sounds like you've done an inventory and here's the universe of available
yeah.
choices and then
so
we'll pick and choose what makes sense
what's gonna make
in
sense
Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
And
it could end up being site and case specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a lot of the grant programs.
Right.
Because, yeah.
It's
awareness
just
that there are these things that may make sense for different
It's just
projects.
That whatever money is set aside, we have to have some vague idea because if we're doing grants, we have to know how much money to set aside for grants.
Well, and the grants that we kind of looked at were more through the legacy funding, through state-level funding, so looking at those, not necessarily city. There are some, like the Rochester Downtown Alliance has some easement grants, and they have a pool of money, so it wouldn't necessarily be through this body, but it would be us directing property owners to those options.
Any other discussions on that topic? Okay, we'll move on to the next one, which is just to get an update on where we are with the budget request. And I know I'll let you chime in, but I'll share whatever I know. It's
okay.
The only I saw was the note. Christine had some delays, family issues, whatever it was, but so she got a Word document with some points on there, and I think that's going to be the basis of what we might talk about next Thursday. That'd be for Brent. I don't know if you've done anything
correct.
Formally on
no,
your side.
No, and looking at Christine's document that she submitted on Sunday, I mean, a lot of blanks left open as far as dollar amounts of
yes.
these things mentioned in her memo. So I think part of that meeting on Thursday is maybe look into this in more detail to figure out what an estimated dollar amount is for that. And keep in mind that this is just a decision pack that was
not approved
or anything. It's just a decision pack that would have to go through some type of approval process to see if it even gets into the budget.
Right.
So.
Any questions?
Aaron Parrish from our office.
Oh, you met with Christine, is that correct?
I haven't met with her, but we
oh, I'm sorry, there was someone else. I'm
sorry.
Jacob she met with. Does that make sense?
Jason.
Jason, sorry.
Sorry, that was Jacob, now it's Jason.
I mix it all around, sorry.
So as Brent indicated, we are going to meet next week, and I think the purpose is really a couple. One is to understand the budget request, and as we prepare our budget, we'll actually be submitting that to the City Council in August, September. They start to reconcile, you know, where they're going to set their levy, and you know, I think the other component of it is even for this year, but in whatever future scenario there is, reconciling the resources we have to the work plan in terms of, you know, how much time of Brent's time is allocated to HPC activities, how much, you know, what the rest of the year's work plan looks like in terms of the activities you have with the district and starting to develop some movement on. Properties that are on the challenge, whether the challenge list, kind of reconciling what we're doing with that, or potential landmark list, and just to kind of identify, you know, what are we really going to focus on that's probably most meaningful from a preservation perspective. we also have a decision package that Brendan put together for a position. So, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, Christine talked about where, you know, resources for, you know, different programmatic activities. And then we have a position request for a halftime urban design, halftime preservation planner position that we could then, you know, either bring into planning or our office and try to be more intentional in how we support the activities of the commission. So we just have to kind of have that back and forth. But I think for now, we do want to spend a lot of time on the focused work plan because we have some ordinance issues that are out there. They're outstanding, and we just need to kind of reconcile, you know, how we want to spend the remaining months of this year as well.
Yes.
Is it your understanding that Brent will continue to be our liaison for at least another probably 9 months or so?
Well, at least for the remainder of this budget year, yeah. I mean, that pending the, you know, adoption of the final budget, you know, we'll have to make that determination. We're also having this contemporary discussion on planning with the Joint Planning Department, or whether we go different directions with that, and then that sort of potentially changes the conversation too, depending on the structure for city planning going forward.
Okay.
It's an activity ultimately that you wouldn't normally see in an administration department. I mean, typically this would belong sort of in the community development planning family of activities. But
right, but this is all long-term planning. This is not something that where he's moving imminently to another department or anything. Or the function is moving imminently to another department.
You know, again, that's what we're evaluating. You know, right. But I think for the remainder of this year, for sure, you know, Brent's going to be focused on these activities to the extent that we can allocate, you know, some of his time to that. I mean, again, this is a small piece of what his portfolio responsibilities are, but it's not the biggest piece of what his responsibilities are.
We know we split many ways.
Yeah.
Not that he doesn't remind us every
right.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on the budget? Okay, the next thing we wanted to talk about, friends, if you could give us an update on where we were with reaching out to those four properties we had talked about last. This is like Chuck's Tire and the other properties we were,
yep,
that were raising their hands who are interested in being designated landmark properties.
So I sent out letters to those four properties asking them for any historical information that they may have on their property, and I asked them to forward it to me. I was out of the office last week, but I did have a package from Tim Schmidt on Chuck's Tire and Auto, just some newspaper clippings and stuff like that on that property. I did have an email from the trustee of the Massey Building, which is in the corner of First Street or Second Street and First Avenue. That's one of the properties where we thought that they wanted to get it designated as a landmark property. Based on their email, they do not want to be designated as a landmark property. So
okay, they've changed their mind.
Correct. I did receive a bunch of information from the other two properties. The two churches also forwarded me a bunch of information on their property as far as
Calvary and I don't remember the last
First Unitarian.
Yeah, First Unitarian Church.
Okay.
So those two properties have also forwarded me information.
Okay. So you're getting some information.
Yep.
Okay. So. And what would be the next steps then? I mean, you've gotten information. We may want to revisit, of course, the one that's changing their mind. But,
and then the commission had also asked me to go out to some firms to get prices on destination studies. So I did email 5 or 6 firms on that, and I have about 4 responses back on that.
Okay.
And my goal was to get them into a spreadsheet and stuff like that and provide that to the commission at your next meeting. So,
great.
With the cost and stuff of each firm.
Okay. Great. Thank you for the update. Any other questions for Brent on that? All right, last one I have, let's see here. Update on the ordinance. Maybe we had some discussions earlier about updating the ordinance, protecting some of the potential properties, and then also there was some discussion about the language does not cover potential districts. So I don't know if you can give us any updates on where we are with.
Well, I had a meeting this morning with the city attorney, and he has drafted an ordinance that would protect those properties on the potential list, but it would not protect those properties on the challenge list due to legal issues felt by the attorney. Most properties have not had their due say before the commission here as far as are they on a list or not on a list. So kind of based on the attorney's opinion, we can't really put a restriction on those properties because they were never given the due process as far as met a hearing process regarding being on that potential list or not.
So the ones that are on the potential list, if I remember, didn't necessarily even respond to the note that was sent to them.
Correct.
The challenge list effectively said, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Some never even responded, and some says, I'm interested in being on the list.
Yeah.
Get me registered. So
yeah.
the ones that were quiet might be protected. Is that what
they're on the
potential
list, but the ones that are challenged...
Or would not.
Would not be correct.
Are we going to get a... So they're going to draft up some language? And
well, I think we're
going to...
That's more of a discussion that I think we're going to have on that July 5th meeting also.
Okay. All right, so I'll talk some of that as well. And then we can share the results back in the language, perhaps, with the...
No, I would think the state attorney would, at some point, bring that language forward for the second meeting at a council meeting.
Okay.
So...
I have a question, because I've been at a lot of the council meetings as well. I was under the impression that the issue was more with the contributing properties in the historic district, but you're saying that was the city attorney's concern, but you're saying his concern is beyond that and now includes all the challenged properties.
Correct,
as well?
Because those properties never had their due process before the council.
Because a lot of those properties, as I mentioned to other people, but I guess historically, I remember the old ordinance, before we even had this ordinance, Mark Bilderback, who's sitting in the back, I think it was the one who actually changed the old ordinance and added an amendment to it to include all the Stark buildings, the Stark list buildings, which had been another list that we had of other buildings, so that there'd be a demolition review on all the buildings that were on the Stark list. This is part of the first. So all those buildings have been on that list, and it was publicized for at least 2 years, if not 3 years. So the idea that no notice was given or that nobody knows about it, and now all of a sudden it seems kind of odd to me that the new city attorney is saying it's hitting these... The people on the challenge list are surprised that their buildings would have a demolition review when a lot of the buildings on the challenge list, as well as the buildings, many of the buildings in the historic district, all have had their demolition permits reviewed, at least the potential for that, reviewed by the HPC for quite a while now. So this is sort of like a big dramatic shifting from what had been reviewed by the prior city attorney is perfectly acceptable because it was added and he didn't object to it. As having the Stark list people included. And he didn't say that every one of those people had to be notified with a hearing, you know, with letters. And that had never been the past practice of the city government. Now, all of a sudden, you're saying the new city attorney wants to change that. Am I correct in reading that?
Well, you mentioned the Stark list, and that's a previous ordinance.
That's
we're not working on that ordinance.
We have
a new ordinance.
But when that ordinance came, the understanding of everyone who I've ever spoken to has always been that the new ordinance would include those. And no one ever said that the buildings that were on the challenged list, for example, would not be included in a demolition permit review. And originally there was an appendix to the original ordinance proposal of this current ordinance, which included both the challenge list, the other list, and remember there was no such thing as a challenge list. It was one list.
Yeah.
One list that included the historic, what most of the buildings on the historic list, it included the buildings on the challenge list, and which are now on the challenge list, and the buildings before that were all on one list. Aaron Reeves, separated them for administrative convenience into three separate lists. One that was going to the consultant, one that was eventually some parts of them were challenged, and one that wasn't. He separated it that way, but then no one
and
ever
the
council, said that they
the
would have it.
Adopted a resolution.
But nobody ever said
list.
that the impact.
The council never adopted the challenge list.
It was always the understanding of everybody that all those lists would have the same, at least the same provisions as what had existed before in terms of demolition reviews.
Because I think Aaron Reeves' mind back when they adopted that resolution of the potential properties is that the commission would look at that challenge list and decide if they should be on the potential list or be taken off the list completely. And since that date, the commission does not want to act on that challenge list.
We want to. We just never got around to it. But what you're saying is that if someone wants to,
we can't agree on what properties look at first.
Well, are you saying that property on the town's list, such as the Corn Tower and all these others, that if they applied for a demolition permit, the building would be knocked down without any review of anybody?
Correct.
That is not. That is certainly not. That's a great concern of mine, and that certainly has not been the intent of any group that I've ever been with, including the prior task force or this HPC. I don't think it was ever the intent that the buildings on the challenge list would actually be subject to immediate demolition permits.
I was at the meeting. What Brent just reflected to this group, which I know you don't agree with,
no, I don't
is know. What the city attorney said.
Right.
He is the legal authority for the city, and he is indicating he's concerned about due process, and he doesn't want a number of lawsuits that the city would have to address. And so he has some concerns about how the challenges came about and whether that should be readdressed. So maybe you want to speak with him about your concerns.
I don't know. I'm just very concerned that these kind of concerns, when we added the symbol list, the start list to the prior ordinance, the last city attorney in similar situations did not come to that conclusion. And then he was a lawyer as well.
He was, and he's not here.
No, unfortunately.
Okay.
It sounds like they've got a good answer.
All right.
I think that gets to the notion of getting together on the 5th. You know, again, I don't want to put all our eggs in that basket. You know, but the reality is there's got to be some momentum on these lists. We have to decide on a process that we all agree upon. And maybe it isn't as comprehensive as what was originally envisioned, but we probably do need to, you know, have some reconciliation and have some momentum on the challenge list. And, you know, I know at one point the idea was that we would have, you know, a review and a study completed to determine both on potential and challenge, you know, whether, you know, those made sense or not. But I always think, as a baseline, maybe as a commission, you need to go through a prioritization exercise. And we're going to work on a, you know, kind of a tool that will help you do that, so we can maybe segment some of these out and really start to focus on the ones that, you know, ultimately are sort of missional to what you're trying to accomplish. But we can't just keep these lists sort of out there in, you know, in perpetuity. To the city attorney's point, you know, there's substantive due process and procedural due process. At some point, the longer this drags out, we get sort of to the wrong side of procedural due process as well. And so we're not there, but, you know, if we're still kind of having the same conversation a few years from now, then it's more problematic. And so, you know, let us take some time and evaluate, you know, what we want to do moving forward on those lists. But the reality is, as Pat and Brent have both indicated, those particular properties, you know, don't have the protection that you're hoping for them to have at this point.
Well, I expected them to have. I will also mention that at the very last meeting, we had decided we were going to do some of the non-contested properties to try to make the, you know, without going to the ones on the contested list. Now, given to the demolition potential on all those, it's almost like we should only do the contested list now, which is the exact opposite of what we decided to do at the last meeting.
Yes.
I'd suggest, Barry, you talk to the city attorney, get that.
If that's his view, that's his view.
So I'm just in terms of now this procedural due process that we have in front of us. You know, last year we did, several of us prioritized these properties, and so now we're back at that again, trying to prioritize these lists. I would like to see us at every single meeting discussing some of these properties and making doing some action on them, whether it's recommending, not recommending, just to get through the list so that we can avoid some of these issues, because we have just been sitting on them.
I think it comes into the budget, right? We have limited resources to do the phase two and things like that. But I think if we have a set of them that we have to get pricing on, we'll have to see what that price comes back in on those three properties or four.
And from what I understood, it's not in the ordinance that we have to do the designation study, right? So there's some that might be
correct
that we can just say, hey, we want to move this to landmark status.
Right, but I think there was. I was of that mindset as well, but I think we heard also that having a consultant's report was helpful to make the case. It was certainly very important for contested properties, but for willing participants, it's not so expensive. Which I think what Brent's trying to do is find out how little can you get, you know, to build up a case, show the case, and then we can, so less cost.
Okay.
Well, there is an application process for somebody that wants to be heard, and people that want to convince you that they should be given the status, they're going to be dragging with information. And so maybe you need a few more pieces of information, or they may have a complete package that they can present to you and you can consider and act on.
Right. That's open to anybody right now.
Question, is that application online?
I don't know if it's an application.
A formal application is being developed, but right now, informally, they can say, this is what I'm requesting, here's my materials, and we are accepting it as submitted.
Okay. Any other discussion on that? I think that got us through the agenda. Was there any other items I missed?
I had one other item on the agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss yours?
Yep. It was History Center.
Oh, yes, thank you. Sorry.
The History Center had emailed me yesterday and today some pictures on the Stoppel farm out there. There's a, I can just show you what. So it's the porch on the Stoppel farm. If you look at where that door is, how the wood's all rotten right there, they would like to replace this porch with wood again. Similar to look just like that. And at one point, there were steps that came off the porch onto the ground. They have been removed because they were all rotten. So steps were removed, I believe, this winter. And they didn't realize how deteriorated the porch was until they were doing some work on the structure recently. So this property is a landmark property. So they just want the okay to go ahead and replace the deck boards on this porch and add back the wooden steps that were on the structure. There has been some talk about possibly adding a railing to that porch because a lot of people do use it to take pictures and stuff like that. But I think if they were to add a railing to that structure, I think the we want some more information on it as far as how it would look and stuff like that. But I really don't see an issue with them replacing those deck boards and maybe the joists underneath it with wood.
Brent, how did this come to you? Did this, it was a last minute thing? Yeah. How did they know to come to you to bring it to us?
They contacted me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And they said, is this something that needs to go before HBC?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. They're asking. Okay.
So,
and you said yes.
They contacted Pat, I think yesterday, wasn't it? Or okay. Friday or something?
It was last week. Right. Okay. And then they don't work on Mondays. And just wanted to have them submit something to Brent. I didn't have any photos. She also indicated that they need to comply with the state as well. And I mean Pat Carlson, I say she.
So we have I'm on that board. We have a meeting tomorrow morning, our board meeting. And so I had the same email, but the thing that they asked me was if they replaced it as is, would a railing be required by code? And the surface is less than 30 inches above the nearest adjacent surface. So they are compliant, as they said, without a guard. Okay. So any guard that they added would not need to meet the requirements of a guardrail. If they come back and add a guard, it could be historically correct. It would not need to meet current building code because, it meets it with that one. So a guard would be decorative, but useful.
Okay.
So
do we need to take a motion on this then to approve that?
I would move to approve.
That's what we're looking for, right? That's what we're
looking for. That would help, yeah.
Okay. I would move to approve the
report. I'll second.
Okay. All right. So motion in Wahlberg. Tasso seconded. Can't say your last name.
Get some gifts.
Yeah, you're good. It's pretty
healthy. How long has this been in?
Further discussion.
How long has this problem been there? Like, I know we're first finding out about it right now. I'm just a little concerned about walk-ons. I'm just, add on to the last minute.
The problem regarding this decking?
Yeah, this particular.
They just found out about it. Just
they were doing some other work on the area and realized that they had some damage, and then as they dug into it, they had more damage, so they wanted to address it immediately, but so that they could keep using the property this summer.
Okay.
your point.
Your point is getting it on the agenda.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I just got pictures last night and this morning from.
Yeah. I imagine that's going to happen to us when we're in this gatekeeper mode for exterior modifications.
I mean, here's some pictures of the floor board. You can see all.
It is short notice, but I mean, they gave appropriate information.
You go dancing.
It's pretty straightforward scope.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get the gist of it.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Pass unanimously. I think with that, we're through everything. There is no public hearings today. So we're at the adjourn thing. So
yay.
Good job, really.
You want to make a motion?
I move to adjourn.
You move to adjourn?
No.
Okay. Barry, did you have a comment before you?
No, I just wanted to point out that we're going to probably have at least, we're going to have a meeting in a month plus probably two meetings within the next.
It's going to be more active here in the 2 months ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
Who seconded that motion? To adjourn.
Oh, sure. Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.